Welcome to the Dungeon Plunger Podcast. My name is Jason Weeb, and this is a show in which I, a real-life janitor and dungeon master, teaches you how to plunge in and run a better Dungeons & Dragons game. Without further ado, let's plunge into this week's episode. Well, actually... Welcome to the Dungeon Plunger Podcast, Union members. We have another week that has gone by and another podcast to drop. Well, I'm sitting down here in my lair, surrounded by all of my nerd RPG hobbies stuff. I've got bookshelves full of novels. I've got bookshelves full of Pathfinder, Dungeons and Dragons, Call of Cthulhu, Savage Worlds, and a variety of other stuff. Detritus collected from years of being involved in this wonderful hobby that we have here. And I would just like to say, I'd like you all to get comfortable doing whatever it is that you're doing while you listen to this. I know some of you are the boring people that listen to it in their car. And I don't blame you because, you know what? I got a long commute. That's a lie. I don't have a long commute. I've got a decent commute. There's people out there who are like on the road for a good chunk of their day. And you know what? My hats are off to you because, quite frankly, it's a tiring job being on the road. It's surprising about how much driving can tire you out. I also know, talking to some of y'all on the various discords that I hang around in, slum in, if you will, that some of you listen to this while you're running and working out. And to you people, I salute you because I am way overweight. And you know what? I really need to get my, I need to really start taking care of myself and get myself back in shape. I'm one of those yo-yo dieting people. You know, I do really good for a while. I get myself down and then, you know what, the call of the cinnamon buns and the chocolate just really reaches out and grabs me by the throat and says, like a really good Alice in Wonderland's, eat me, drink me, and all the rest of that. So, to you working out, I salute you. I hope you burn those calories and, you know, just feel mentally better afterwards. That's really what it is, isn't it? On this week's show, we've got call-ins. I got calls from Joe Richter, Hindsightless. Got calls from Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. And I got a call from Barry of Dice and Shadows. As well, I have a mysterious caller, and we will hear from them a little bit later. After that, once we take all those lovely calls, who I'm very thankful for everybody to be calling in and sharing their thoughts and feelings. Because you know what? Sharing is caring. And this show wouldn't be half of what it is without you guys calling in and letting me know what you think. And I appreciate it. Also, the main topic of this show, we will be talking about, well, actually... And I think we've all experienced that guy before. So we're going to, maybe it'll be a little controversial. Maybe it won't. Yeah, I thought we would talk about that this week and see where that goes. What have I been doing this week in terms of gaming stuff? Well, I have been playing, not playing, but I've been preparing a lot of Magic decks. I've been building a lot of Commander decks. I have a lot of cards. And I basically said, okay, you know what? Let's sit down and build some new decks here. Get some of these decks to the table, you know, put my proverbial money where my mouth is and make it happen. So that's been my big thing. I haven't really had any games this week. I'm preparing for my next session of Stars Without Numbers Traveler, the Pirates of Drynax. You know, it's interesting because some people say Drynax and other people say Drynax. If you know what the proper way of saying it is, you let me know. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. It was written by people over in the UK, so I'm assuming that the North American pronunciation is probably not accurate, but, you know, I don't know. Is it really important? It's surprising about how much emphasis we put on things like that, these little details. And yet, somehow, the details, much like today's topic, are kind of where things get a little bit tricky. I will be preparing for my youth group. One of the players is going to be on vacation for the next month or so, and so we'll be down to three players. And so I proposed that we play some Deadlands in the meantime, in order to be able to, like, keep the game going without having to, like, go on for a month without the other player missing everything that's happening in the Shadowdark game. And in theory, I could keep doing the Shadowdark game, but I'll be honest, one of my goals was to get the Savage Worlds Deadlands to the table this year, and so this will be a nice little distraction. I think we can do it, and, you know, by the time that player gets back, we should have it tied up, and I'll let you guys know about how that went. But I'm pretty excited to do that. So let's take our first call and see what they have to say as we deeply plunge into the Mimic Mailbox.
Hey, yo, Jason, just calling in after listening to your most recent episode. Do you want to hear about my campaign and the call-in palooza? That was an awesome episode. It was great to hear from everybody. Long live Hector. That was an amazing call, dude, that cracked me up for sure. So I wanted to touch on a couple things that the callers brought up and that were in your previous episodes that I didn't get to call in on. One is world building. Yes, I agree that Galarian is an awesome world. And I think it's a fantastic adventure setting. I also really, really prefer homebrew, building my own worlds. Because typically, even though I'm running Wrath of the Righteous right now, typically I run homebrew worlds because I find it personally easier for me to keep track of locations, NPC events that are going in the world when I'm creating it myself, as opposed to, you know, having to go back and dig through the lore of Galarian or whatever world I'm playing in. That said, I do really like pre-written settings because I get a lot of inspiration from there. And as far as building your own world goes, think about the things. I typically don't give advice, right? Like, who am I to give advice? Anyway, if you're thinking about building your own world, what I did for my last world that I built, which was, I think, a really awesome world, what I did, I was, at the time period, which this was pre-pandemic, I was reading and watching a lot of videos on the Punic Wars, and I was thinking about, what if Carthage won? So that was one of my main ideas. What if Carthage had won the Punic Wars? Another one was, I had just recently reread Gardens of the Moon, and there's a lot, that's the first book in the books of the Malazan series, Malazan, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of amazing inspiration in there for gaming stuff, and I took a lot of it from that, and then just other sources of information. I just took pieces and bits from here and there, from Frank Herbert's Dune, from the Punic Wars, from Malazan Book of the Fallen, from a couple of different YouTube channels that I watch, and just kind of mashed it all together in a way that worked out for me, and then kind of went from there. But yeah, as far as building your own world, just think about the stuff that you like, the stuff that really interests you. Talk to your players a little bit, but for the grand setting, for the overall setting, yeah, just think about the things that interest you at the time, different pieces of inspiration, and then just yank that and mash them all together in a setting that works out. I don't know, that sounds probably pretty disjointed. My allergies are really kicking my butt today. I need to move to some desert where nothing grows, like the Arctic because I hate the heat. So I need to move to the Arctic where nothing grows, and then I'll feel fine all the time. Anyway, man, elbows up. Peace out.
Hey there, Joe. Thank you so much for your call. Always good to hear from you. And you had a lot of really good things to say here. So let's just go over it. When it comes to world building, I feel like I'm in the same camp as you. I, too, really enjoy Galarian and Forgotten Realms, and there's a lot of other pre-written worlds that I really like. You're right, it is hard to keep all of that lore and keep track of all of that stuff. I think this is sort of the reason why people prefer to run their own mega dungeons as opposed to a pre-written one, because mentally, it's just a lot easier to keep all that stuff in your brain where, you know, you can pull on it when you need it, which is the most important part when you're at the table, you know, when you're under that pressure. It's sort of the idea of like being in the military and having your training. And it's not, obviously there's a lot of things that you do because, you know, you're taught these are the procedures and stuff, but at the same time, it's built in, right? You can be a little more reactive as opposed to thinking about what I'm supposed to do. You just do the drill, if that makes any sense. But I agree that I think that's where these pre-written campaign settings really shine, is that they provide amazing inspiration on what to include in your setting. The Punic Wars campaign and What If Carthage won sounds like such a cool idea. I think, you know, what you hit on here with the mesh approach is really the best way to run a game that you're going to enjoy, because now you're including all those things that you really love and the things that your players love. Because I believe that the campaigns that we're running, it's a team sport. I'm really trying to get away from this idea that it's my campaign, it's our campaign at the table. And so taking the ideas of your players and incorporating them is going to make your campaign that much more fun and that much more successful. Dude, when you're talking about Gardens of the Moon and Steven Erikson, I have that whole series. I call it Malazan, but I could see how you would call it Malazan. I don't know if Erikson's ever actually said what the proper pronunciation is. I'm sure he has, but that is the most in-depth world that I've ever seen. Supposedly came out of playing GURPS. Also, Canadian, lived in Winnipeg, my hometown. Whoop whoop for that. I mean, listen, it's hard to go wrong with Dune. I mean, Dune was a big inspiration for Star Wars. So I think that's really what it comes down to, right? Like we're saying here, steal everything and then mash it into that delicious potato mountain of role-playing goodness. I feel for you, brother. Allergies, that's a major bummer, dude. I hope that, you know, you find that place one day where you'll be allergy free. But you know what? I'm envious. You live in a part of the country where I find it super beautiful. If I could live on the West Coast, I would totally go for it. But I can understand how you wouldn't want to do that if you're feeling like poobies. Thank you very much for the call. Thank you for your support with the elbows up. We will chat later. I will be listening, because I'm always listening, Joe. Always listening. And if you liked what Hector had to say last week, just keep listening. Now, let's take our next call. You may know him as the godfather of the Anchorite podcast. Perhaps he's the Moses of the Anchorite podcast sphere. Maybe he's our Batman. I'll let you decide. But let's listen to the ever wise words of Jason Connerly from the Nerds RPG Variety Cast.
Tap, tap, tap. Hello, is this thing on? So, enjoyed your latest episode, Jason. I have to say that I'm boring. I listen in the car. I spend 70 to 90 minutes on average, sometimes under 20 minutes, each way to work every day. So I get to consume a lot of media, make a lot of phone calls from the car, do a lot of dangerous stuff. It's great. But, you know, that's boring, so what can I say? As far as your campaigns, they sound very cool. Thank you for sharing them. I really appreciate that. And as far as Pathfinder, the Pathfinder world, I get what you're saying about, you know, being a little bothered by the kitchen sink thing. But there is a really cool map out there you've probably seen where it kind of makes fun of all the Pathfinder stuff. I'll send you a copy if you haven't seen it. It's kind of hard to explain on the air. But to me, I think the difference with, like, the last episode with your one caller who does a lot of solo is with solo, you don't want to really have everything figured out ahead of time because it's more fun if you're exploring as you go. So having that preset setting with all the details might not be as fun for a solo player, where it's more necessary for a GM so the players can explore it as they go. Whoops, let me clarify. I was rushing to get under the 90 seconds for my last message. But so the reason I brought up that Pathfinder map is I think that map with, you know, like here be robots and here be barbarians and the cold waste and demon land and things like that, as opposed to having the, you know, world books and knowing all the details, as a GM, you probably want those world books, and especially as a busy GM with a job and a family, you want those world books so you can just read up on that and then lay it out for your players as they explore. But as a solo player, having that map with those kind of funny prompts and not knowing anything else about the world would be really cool, because you can go in and, yeah, they'll be kind of like madcap silly adventures to some degree. But I have this idea that I want to do a solo game using that map as a world, but not having any other world information and just riffing off that as my character explores the world, right? So that's kind of something I've thought about doing, and I probably will do one of these days. But anyhow, I just thought maybe I'd give a little more clarification what I was saying, whether it was needed or not. So take care, and hey, I'll join the party. Elbows up!
Hey there, Jason. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your call-in. Always appreciate it. And I'm glad that I can be there on your long commutes with you, hanging out in your vehicle, like two bros, just going across the world and fighting evil, fighting crime. That sounds weird. I don't know why I said that, dude. Sometimes weird things come into my mind and I just say them. Some people would say that's because I don't have a filter. And those people might be right. Talking about the kitchen sink map, folks, I just want you to know that Jason Connerly is a man of his word, and he did in fact send me that map. And it is hilarious. I'd seen one similar to that, but I had not seen that particular map. I just wanted to throw out one of the comments that he said about solo players wanting to figure it out as they go along versus having it hardcore down. And for you solo players out there, I'm curious, do you agree with what Jason says here? Do you feel like that is an accurate assessment? I personally think that he probably has a point there. But what's very interesting is, and I haven't really delved deep into it, but I know that Tana Pidgeon, the creator of the Mythic game engine, has a bunch of different magazine articles that talk about taking pre-written material and then how to use that in your solo games. I'm not a solo expert by far. In fact, I've done very little soloing, even though that has been one of my goals for this year. However, on that subject, I do have a lavalier mic set that's going to be coming in, and I'm hoping that this will allow me to do some solo recording while I'm not necessarily at home. Because right now my setup is at the home, and I find that by the time I get home, I am too tired to actually sit down and record and do the soloing, and I should be making better use of my time during the day. But that's a topic for a different time. Let's get back to what Jason was talking about. I think I really like this idea as the map as a prompt. I think there are so many great maps that have been published, and using those as a inspirational tool for your solo game would be an incredible experience. Take the map that comes in the Dragonbane setting. That's a beautiful map. Take the map from Forbidden Lands. There's numerous maps, actually, depending on which product you have. But even if you took the map from the core box, those are beautiful maps. you could take the map from the starter box, Mines of Phandelver, from D&D 5e, which is a hex map, all sorts of cool stuff on there. Forget about anything to do with Forgotten Realms. I mean, there's a bunch of names for all sorts of things. So imagine having your character moving along, or your group of characters moving along those maps and exploring them. And, you know, there's a lot. There's a lot of different maps that you could be doing that with. In fact, imagine, forget about just solo play, but imagine just taking those maps and using them as a tool to create your own setting and just being like, yeah, that's a really interesting thought. And I really like that idea. So thanks for bringing that up. That's a great point, Jay. I also really appreciate the elbows up, same as Joe Richter. And I just want to let you guys know that despite all the craziness that's going on in the world, I still love you American people. I got a lot of American friends. I got a lot of American listeners. Just know that none of this affects my view of you guys. I think that Canada and the States, we have a strong connection, and we shouldn't let political BS get in between us. And that's as far as I want to take the political stuff. I just wanted to let you guys know that I appreciate that you're thinking about us. And I know there's many of us up here who are thinking about you, and we've got your backs, guys. Let's move on to our next caller. Some may call him, if it's not Scottish, it's Crap Berry. Other people might call him GM Shadow. Some people might call him the hero that we don't deserve, but the one that we need. I don't know what's with all the Batman references today. I don't even know if that's the line. But you know what? Let's hear what Barry has to say.
Hi Jason, it's Barry here from A Song of Dice and Shadows. Just trying to catch up on all the shows I've listened to over Easter that I haven't had a chance to ring in about. Things off the top of my head that I wanted to say was Sunless Citadel was an amazing adventure. I've run it about 5 times, I think, now in different iterations. I think I've run it 3 times, at least, well, twice in 3.5 as it was. And one time I sort of took the encounters and moved them around and did it in a different setting. It's a bit random, but anyway, that's how it goes. I've run it once in Dungeon Fantasy GURPS and then one time using a variation of Fudge. So yeah, I made good use of that adventure, so I recommend it to people. Yeah, I guess there maybe are some issues in it, but actually overall it kind of works more or less what it needs to do. It's a bit, you know, interesting, some of the things. I don't like some of the points in the ending that you can't do, say, for example, but otherwise quite enjoyed it. I think Bruce Cordell did quite a good job of that one, which is why I think it made it into the Tales of the Yawning Portal as well, which, as did Forge of Fury, which was kind of its sequel in that what wasn't really an adventure path, but kind of was an adventure path for third edition that came out back in the day. I think the next thing I want to mention, Masters of Orion. So me and my brother used to play that loads back when I was a kid. I can't really say too much about it because it probably require a content warning, because my stories involve things of like slavery and genocide and stuff. So yeah, if you ever want to have a chat sometime, it will need a content warning probably if I talk about those things in such a flippant way. But anyway, yeah, that's what I say. Can recommend the game. It's a lot of fun, especially those people you can play it with, you know, online or whatever. I don't know how it really works these days. There was a Masters of Orion 2, which I think we ran, and it was like you could sort of took it in turns. You went and played it on the computer on the same set. It was kind of random, but anyway, yeah, I'll stop rambling on about that one now. Last thing I wanted to kind of say was War of the Worlds, Jeff Wayne. Would I classify it as a musical? It had musical scores. It was kind of almost like an audio drama with musical scores in between. I mean, it's not like they're on there singing, "The Martians are here with evil in their rise, with shields and heat rays, they will vaporize." It wasn't really that kind of a musical, if you know what I mean. It just kind of had musical scores in between. I loved it, actually, again, as a teenager. So again, I can recommend it. Definitely worth checking out if you've not heard it before. So yeah, so now onwards with your show. I'm sort of halfway through your most recent one, talking about your campaign. So yeah, I'll get back into that now and I shall catch you soon. But I wanted to record this just so I don't run out of time and not get around to replying. You have a million of calls on your show anyway, so I'm not sure you need mine. But yeah, there it is. Speak to you soon.
Hey there, Barry. Thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it. First thing I want to address, I need all the calls. I need all the calls. Do not feel, any of you listeners out there, do not feel like you shouldn't call in. If you have the slightest desire, inkling, need, you should call in. I need to hear your voices. I need to hear what you have to say. I want to engage with you, okay? I've got a fever, and the only cure is more cowbell. Michael Scott. Now that I got that out, I really needed to get that out. Talking about the Sunless Citadel, I agree. I think The Sunless Citadel is an amazing adventure. It has weaknesses, for sure. It has weaknesses. But the fact that, as you said, it was reprinted in the 5th edition, Tales from the Yawning Portal, and I believe that it was in a Dragon magazine where they were rating like the 30 top adventures, which I'm 99% Forge of Fury was in that as well. Just goes to show you that out of like 50 years of Dungeons and Dragons, this has had an impact on the game. I love the fact that you've been able to run it in so many different iterations of game engines. But in particular, I love that you just took it for parts and ran encounters, because I think that's part of what really shines about this module, is that it has a lot of really cool sort of set pieces in it, and a lot of really interesting for a dungeon to have so many interesting NPCs in it, I think is fantastic and really highlights what makes a dungeon great. Now, the dungeon layout itself probably could use a little bit of tweaking, and like you said, some of the encounters needed a little more, you know, zhuzhing, if you will. That's a technical term, guys. Zhuzhing. Okay, a little fixy fix to make them a little more usable, at least the way that I would like to play these days. And the Forge of Fury. Dude, this is one I never ran the Forge of Fury. I've always wanted to run the Forge of Fury. And the Wizards of the Coast 3rd Edition Proto Adventure Path. So all those little modules that they put out are all loosely linked together. And one of the things that I find really fascinating about that is that I had always felt that they were too loosely linked. So I really appreciated when Dungeon Magazine started their Adventure Path series, because they really tightly linked all the adventures together. In retrospect now, I feel like the initial proto Adventure Path was the better way of doing it. By allowing less tight links between the adventures allows you as a game master to really insert stuff in between and give your players that connective fiber. So the background of your characters and, you know, their stories, and insert other adventures of your design into them. I think that's a strength, not a weakness. And I think, like, I haven't really seen or read Adventure Paths from Paizo lately, so I don't know how tightly woven they are, but I know a lot of the older ones definitely were. So it made it really difficult to sort of veer off the train tracks, if you will, and make the campaign more yours. So I think you make a really great point, and I'm glad that you share a fondness for the same adventure that I did. And I am glad to hear that you've played Masters of Orion. I'm a little disturbed that there's a content warning about your story. Not really sure what's going on over there, Barry. I hope that we don't have to get Interpol or Scotland Yard involved. I don't even know if Scotland Yard takes care. I don't even know where you live, Barry. I know you're over there across the pond, as they say. Just keep your nose clean, brother. I don't want to be reading about you on the internets and finding out that this guy who played Master of Orion was doing all sorts of weird stuff. And when it comes to talking about the War of the Worlds musical, that's kind of how I look at musicals. I mean, I think we've got varying levels of musicals. Thank you so much for your call, Barry. Really appreciate it, and I look forward to hearing from you again. Now, I have a special caller. Let's listen in and hear what they have to say.
Hello? Is this thing on? How do I know it's working? Well, Dungeon Plunger, if you can hear me, it is I, your arch-rival and nemesis, the Clogging Goblin. You may not remember me, but I remember you. I was watching from under the sink as you killed my parents with that plunger of yours. And I will have my revenge. Wherever there is a pipe, I will be there to make it drip, Where there is a drain, I will be there to clog it with a hairball. And where there is a toilet, I will be there to infuse it with magic and turn it into a mimic. Watch your back, Dungeon Plunger, because the clogging goblin will be lurking in every shadow of the sewers. Also, I love the show. Goodbye.
Thank you very much for calling in, Clogging Goblin. I really appreciate it. Super hilarious, but I'm sorry about your parents. I did pass the message on to Hector, the real Dungeon Plunger, and this was his response.
Know this, villain! Pray that we do not cross path, for you shall find yourself facing the wrong end of Mind Plunger. And remain in the dark to see all your skullduggery undone by I, Hector. Count thyself lucky that Zendor, the supervisor, put me on the day shift, else you would find yourself in a very smelly grave. Now, if you'll excuse me, my break is over, and I don't want Zendor on my case again.
So there you have it, folks. We have real drama on the Dungeon Plunger podcast. Clogging Goblin and Hector, the real Dungeon Plunger. I feel a real battle royale may occur if these two ever meet in person. However, something tells me the Clogging Goblin is pretty stealthy, pretty sneaky, and I would watch your back, Hector, because I feel like this guy's got a lot of tricks up his sleeves. Well, folks, that's all the calls we got this week. I appreciate each and every one of you. If by some chance I missed your call, let me know, send me an email, and I'll make sure to get it on the next show. I am not trying to ignore you on purpose. I'm just really bad at doing my job. I would like to thank all the people that called in. Joe Richter from the Hindsightless Show, Jason Connerly from Nerds RPG Variety Cast, and Barry from A Song of Dice and Shadows. And of course, to whoever you may be, Clogging Goblin, and of course, Hector, the real Dungeon Plunger. You can send me a message on my SpeakPipe. The link is in the show notes. Or if that's not your bag, you can send me an email at dungeonplunger@gmail.com, all one word, and I will read out, or not, as you wish, your messages on the air and respond to them. I really enjoy doing this. I love hearing from all of you. Don't feel shy. I don't bite. I like engaging with y'all. Finally, let's move on to the main topic. Well, actually,
let's get it on.
All right. Welcome to the main course. What I wanted to talk about today was the well actually guy. And I think we've all been there. We've all experienced it, or at least those who have had any kind of experience in this hobby. The way this topic came up was I play biweekly with my youth group, which consists of my daughter, her boyfriend, and a couple of their friends. And we have a great game. They're great players. And overall, we really enjoy getting together and playing the game. So when we're not playing, sometimes I like to ask them, like, hey, have you guys listened to the podcast? And do you find it useful? Because while I'd like this to be a podcast that's useful for every stripe of gamer, in particular, I'm trying to help game masters, and in particular, new game masters, or referees, judges, whatever you want to call them, get to the table and play the game and get over the anxiety about running games. One of my players said, hey, how would you handle the well actually guy? And I was like, you know what? That's a great question. Let me talk about that on the next cast. As they say, the cool kids say. I felt like, well, the well actually guy is just one of the many types of problem players that we'll encounter when we're playing. And Essentially, I've broken it down into 7 categories of problem players that we'll encounter when we're running the game. Now, granted, some people may never encounter these people, and then other people will encounter them at their fullest extreme, and others in a more milder sense. Ultimately, any time that you have a problem with your players, the solution is that you need to have a talk with those people and work out what your expectations for the game is and carry on from there. But I feel like while that's the core of the idea, it kind of simplifies it a little bit, and I would like to kind of dig in a little deeper. Because you know what? We're trying to make a podcast episode here, and if I don't talk about stuff, then there's no podcast, right? Right. I've identified 7, and there's probably a lot more, but I've identified sort of 7 archetypes of the problem player. I'm going to go through each one. I'm going to tell you what they are. If I can give a little anecdote, I will, and how I would suggest solving these problems. If you don't hear the kind of problem player that you've experienced here, or if you disagree with what I'm saying, feel free to call in, speak pipe, write in, or, you know, send smoke signals. Either way, I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Starting with 1, we have the rules lawyer. This is the classic, well, actually, guys, the rules lawyer is the person who knows the rules of the game. They are the person that really gravitates to rule systems and has gained some sort of mastery over it. And when they see you running the game and you're not actually doing it the way that it's supposed to, they get upset about that or they point it out. And sometimes this is because they're trying to show off their superiority for rules mastery. But other times it could just be their frustration with, well, why aren't we playing with the rules? And I think there is something to be said about that. We should be playing with the rules when we can. But that being said, not every game system requires the same depth of rules. For instance, if I'm playing a rules-heavy game like Pathfinder, and I'm skipping or being, you know, light on the rules, and someone's built their character around taking advantage of those rules, then it's normal for them to be upset, and there should be certain expectations that are met in that regard. I think the first step in solving that problem is to have the discussion with your players up front about what rules you're using, what rules you're not using, and to essentially come to some sort of common ground. Sometimes we have a problem when the game master either forgets or isn't aware of what a rule is, and then the rule lawyer will pop up. Now, I think the thing about a rules lawyer is that these guys should be your best friend. These are the game master's best friend. Okay, we need to flip the script on this, and you've got to get this guy to basically be your backup GM and be like, hey, Bob, how does this rule work again? And Bob can tell you, well, actually, on page blah 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 blah, you can find the rules here, and they say blah blah blah, and you're like, all right, perfect, thanks, Bob. And then you can carry on with the game. So I think that the rules lawyer, while they get a bad rap, are probably one of the better problem players, quote unquote, that you could have at your table. 2, the setting guru. This is sort of a subset of the rules lawyer. However, instead of them being masters of the rules, they are masters of the particular setting that you're playing in. For example, say you're playing in a Tolkien-esque Lord of the Rings setting, and they know a ton of stuff about everything to do with Lord of the Rings, and then you're running the game and you get it wrong, they'll be like, well, actually. And I think, again, there's a few things. 1, you gotta sort of say, hey, I'm not actually using those things. I've adjusted the setting to fit my own way of playing the game. Or you should be using them the same way that you would use a rules lawyer and basically allow them to help you fill in your game system and use them as a secondary game master, as I said, to aid you in the game. Now, the thing is, one of my favorite Dungeons & Dragons authors is Ed Greenwood, the creator of the Forgotten Realms. And one of the things that I really love about his work, and What I'm talking about here in particular is his Gray Box, the box set that came out that talked about the Forgotten Realms. And in that book, he would give statistics, or at least give advice on like levels and all this kind of stuff about the different NPCs that you could find in the realms. And what was great is that he would basically say, hey, these are just suggestions in case you have players that happen to read the book and they're like, well, King Azun was really like a 5th level paladin, 10th level fighter, and so therefore he should only have these things. And you can say, well, the person in this book is an unreliable narrator, okay? And so therefore, that's what they believed, but that's not necessarily what the official truth of the setting is. The official truth of the setting is whatever we decide at the table when it comes into play. Okay. The other thing is that just because you're using a setting doesn't mean that you need to use everything in that setting as canon. I think the biggest pivot that I had in my thinking about setting comes from the period in the Forgotten Realms that happened from Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition switching over to Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. What happened is Forgotten Realms 4th edition, the realms changed dramatically. 100 years passed from what happened in the 3rd edition of Forgotten Realms to the 4th edition, and there was a lot of people that were really upset with that change to their favorite setting ever. When 5th edition came along and Wizards of the Coast was trying to create the ultimate edition of Dungeons & Dragons, the one that was going to unify all of the different players from all the different types of D&D that there were out there, they came up with this idea called the Sundering for the Forgotten Realms, where it was going to transition the world from 4th edition to 5th edition and essentially say the separation of what happened in 4th edition to like what's happening now in the 5th edition version of the game. And I believe there was only like a 5-year separation in terms of what the 5th edition version of the world looked like versus the 4th edition. And I remember reading a blog and the guy who wrote it, and I don't remember who it was, so I apologize for that, but they basically were saying, I hope that the Sundering is this concept where everybody's version of the Forgotten Realms is a different version. So it's everybody's Forgotten Realms is their own Forgotten Realms. It's as if the realms was in a mirror and then that mirror shattered and each shard was like a miniature version of the realms. And now everybody has their own realms. And from that point forward, whatever happened was your own individual world. And so that's when I really took it to heart that my Greyhawk doesn't need to be like everybody else's Greyhawk. My Forgotten Realms doesn't need to be like everybody else's Forgotten Realms. And whatever other setting I'm using, you know, my Tolkien setting doesn't need to be the same as everybody else's. Maybe Frodo died. Spoiler alert. Maybe Saruman didn't turn evil and it was Gandalf. Think about playing Star Wars and finding out that Luke Skywalker wasn't really Darth Vader's son. These things dramatically change the whole world and our ideas behind them. That's what I think about the setting guru and how I would go about fixing it. Number 3, the real life expert. The real life expert is that guy who in real life works or studies the particular subject matter that you're running in your game, aka the fun killer. This guy is a tricky dude because if you've ever watched a show and you've seen stuff on there where you're like, your profession is being shown. For instance, say you work in a hospital and you're watching a medical drama and you see how doctors are doing things and you're like, dude, that's not what a doctor would do at all. And so for people in those professions or with that knowledge, they find it very frustrating that the material isn't being treated with the proper reverence and that it takes them out of the game that they're in, right? It breaks that suspension of disbelief. Again, I would say the solution to this problem is to engage that player as sort of your advisor at the table. If you're doing something that involves medical care and you have somebody who has medical knowledge at the table, then you can ask them, hey, how do you think that this would be handled? And then they can give their opinion. They feel validated Everybody at the table feels like, oh, wow, okay, now we're engaging in something that feels more real to life, and take it from there. And then the game is going to move on. So the idea so far has been engage with your players. Don't try to go against them. Try to bring them into the fold and make them a part of the game. Because as I've said before, role-playing games are meant to be a team sport. It's not your game as game master. It's everybody's game at the table. So when everybody feels like they've shared and contributed to the game, it's going to be a lot more fun. Now we move on to something a little bit more tricky. Number four, that's what my character would do guy. This is the guy who makes the character. Typically, they seem to be the thief and they steal from the other players and they backstab the players and they're just overall kind of jerky. These are followed very closely by the lone wolf character. In traditional media, you would have that lone wolf punisher guy or spawn or, I don't know, that the man with no name cowboy dude that walks into town and takes on everybody by himself. The problem with this is that these people are extremely disruptive to the table. And I think the guy who says that's what my character would do is looking more for an excuse to be an a-hole than anything else. Whereas the character who's playing the lone wolf is just trying to typically emulate a trope of media. But I think that the solution to this is that you need to head off this problem right from the beginning. And when I mean the beginning, I mean when characters are being created. When you see somebody who's making the lone wolf character, you gotta be like, hey, you know what? I don't think that this is particularly appropriate to my game. Or if you see the guy making the rogue, and you kind of have to be like right from the beginning, like, hey guys, I'm not down with the player versus player combat. I'm not down with people screwing over each other for treasure, that kind of stuff. And I think that'll save you a lot of headaches in the long run. Number five, the min-maxer or the power gamer. These people are the ones that figure out the loophole in the system and try to break your game. Depending on the kind of game that you're playing, this might be a problem and it might not. For instance, if you're playing a game where having system mastery is important, then the issues or the encounters that the players are going up against are difficult and they've been sort of min-maxed to challenge people who have a high level of system mastery, then it's going to be important. You're going to want to have people who know how to bend the system and take full advantage of the game. But if you're running a game that tends to be a little lighter on the rules or has some areas of the rules that tend to be easily exploitable, then you're going to have a problem. And my advice is that if you know that your game has these particular loopholes, is to like identify them at the beginning of the game or beginning of character creation and kind of put a stop to it. So for example, and this isn't explicitly in the Call of Cthulhu rules, but I have a rule that I don't let characters have a starting score higher than 80% in a skill. I feel like there should be a certain amount of failure. You know, you don't want people to be super successful. That's just my opinion. I feel like 80%, if you're really good at something, means that you've got a good chance of succeeding, but there's still that sort of suspense about like, well, maybe you're not going to succeed. Other people might feel differently about that, but one of my big issues with playing third edition D&D and Pathfinder was when it really became about talking about character builds more than it came to talking about characters. And I enjoy a good crunchy game and I enjoy a good tactical combat, but not when all we're talking about is playing essentially a highly narrated war game. I remember having a player when I was running Tomb of Annihilation who made a character whose armor class was so high that virtually nothing could hit him. And he basically just stomped over all of the encounters and the rest of the people in the group weren't really having fun because it felt like this guy was taking the center of the stage. And I felt like he was flaunting it in my face. Ha ha ha. I made this character who's untouchable. And
I had originally said, guys, just make characters that are fun. Don't go crazy and try and do something like this. So basically, one day they were in an area where there were gargoyles up in a cliff. He was climbing. He decided to climb the cliff to like see something. I don't remember exactly what it was that he was looking for. And the gargoyle swooped down, grabbed him, picked him up, flew up into the sky, and then dropped him from the sky. And his armor class didn't save him and he died. And I tried to tell him, I'm like, guys, I'm the game master. I can kill you at any time. Doesn't make sense for you to, if you're going to arbitrarily decide that you're going to break the game because you think you can pull one on the game master, I could just make rocks fall from the sky. I could just make the sun go supernova. I'm not playing an adversarial game here. Like, let's keep things within reason, not escalate the weapons race, so to speak, and everybody's going to have a lot more fun for it. You know, this guy did a few other things like that, and eventually he just ended up leaving. He had totally different expectations for how the game should be played, and I respect that. It just wasn't compatible with our table at the time. Number 6, cheaters. You know, it's really sad to say that there's people who cheat in role-playing games. You think we come together to play these games to have fun. So why would you cheat? Like, part of the tension in the game comes from when you try to accomplish something and you're like, oh my gosh, am I going to succeed or am I not going to succeed? We had this one player, this person, he had two ways that he would like to cheat. The first one was that sometimes he would read the modules and would discover things that there was no way. Our game master became very suspicious. He was like, I don't really understand how he figured that out without having read the book. It wasn't obvious, and he did something particularly egregious where it was like, yeah, there was nothing that triggered you to do that. You just sort of like went right to it. So it was pretty suspicious, and then eventually he figured out that, yeah, the guy was reading the same module at home before coming to the game. The other trick that this person liked to do was dice rolling tricks. And so what he would like to do is he would roll a dice and then he would scoop them up really, really fast before you could even see what the results of the dice roll were. And then he would calculate in his mind, based off of extrapolating who hit for how much, what he needed to actually hit. And sometimes if he missed, he would go, oh, wait, I forgot. I got a bonus for this. And then he'd be like, okay, yeah, so I hit. Eventually, this game master would start adding. He's like, yeah, I added a +2 armor class bonus versus this particular player because I know that that's what they're doing. Which is pretty sad, really, when it all comes down to it. And it was brought up one time that this person was cheating and they got really upset. And so we never really brought it up again. And we just sort of kind of rolled with it that this is what he did. But it often led to these experiences where this person would essentially save the day. And he'd be like, oh, I saved us all from like doom because you guys suck and blah, blah, blah. And we'd be like, dude, it was just very discouraging to play with somebody like that. So my advice is don't play with people that cheat. Some people will be like, oh, well, I need to see your dice rolls. One thing that I've learned, especially now that we play with a lot of online playing, and we oftentimes the game masters will allow players to roll their own dice, and you go, oh, well, I can't see their dice, so maybe they're cheating. And I think you have to have trust in your players that they're not doing it. And if you think that your players are doing it, like I said, have the conversation. And then if it continues, you just got to end it. You got to be like, dude, I can't have this in my game if that's a big deal to you. If you don't, you know what I mean? But like I said, I think 99.9% of people are cool. They're not going to cheat. And it's just something to be aware of. But sadly, it does occur. Lastly, number 7, the disruptors. Some people, like Alfred says, just want to see the world burn. These people are just problem causers, and there's nothing that you can do that's going to make them fit into your group. You can have the discussions with them, but there's just something about them that they get joy from causing problems at the table. And ultimately, if they're not willing to follow the code of the group, you're just going to have to tell them, you know what, dude, we're not compatible and you're going to have to find your own group. Lastly, I think that it's worth mentioning that there's two special cases, and these are not problem players. Okay. So I want to highlight that number one. The first special case is the socially awkward person, all right? I think many of us have probably had that person at their table who might be on the spectrum, and we don't really know what it is that's why this person acts the way they do, but they come by it honestly, and they don't mean to be socially awkward or disruptive. It's just part of their character, and they can't help it. And I think when everybody realizes at the table that you have somebody at your table that's like this, I think you need to be supportive and sort of just kind of go along with it and understand that when they do things, they're not doing it to be malicious. They're doing it because it's just part of the social awkwardness that they're dealing with. We play with a guy currently, and he knows that he's a little socially awkward, and everybody else at the table knows. And quite frankly, his character and his unpredictability make some of our game nights some of the most fun. But it would be very easy to see him doing it as if you were looking in from the outside as, hey, why do you play with that weirdo? And my litmus test for people who I want in my gaming group is, if you can't play at my table with this particular person, then you're probably not going to be a good fit for our group. And I've never met a more wholesome or fun person to be around. And so I think it's important to highlight that. The second special case is the quiet players. Often I've heard game masters go, oh, wow, this person doesn't come out of their shell. They're so quiet. They don't really engage. And these people I dub as the sort of social gamers who just like to hang out with people. They enjoy being around the group and seeing everybody have fun and doing the little bit of social activity that they do, but they don't want to get involved. They don't want to be the center of attention, and they just want to enjoy being there. And forcing them to become involved is very uncomfortable for them. And I think that sometimes we think as game masters, like, oh, if I push them to get more involved, that this is going to be a good thing and they're going to come out of their shells. And ultimately, I don't think that we're doing them any favors. And I don't think that we're doing our table any favors. I think it is good to encourage people, but I think once you've recognized that you do have one of these people that just likes to be chill and hang out at your table, that you should respect that and be cool with that's what their choice is. That's the conclusion to my little problem players discussion here. Ultimately, to just round everything up, I think, you know, we should definitely be talking to our players before the game and tell them what kind of game are we running, what are our expectations for the game, so that everybody is on the same page. And if you're in the same game group all the time, then probably not going to have this discussion more than once. But if you're playing with people that you've never played with before, then yeah, you're definitely going to need to like kind of put up your expectations up front. And if you do have somebody that causes some sort of a problem, maybe take that person aside privately so that they're not embarrassed. And between the two of you, you can figure out, hey, what's the situation? Why? What's going on? And sometimes people are just having a bad week. Sometimes we've got a lot of stress going on in our lives or whatever it is. And so these people are acting out and they don't mean for it to like become negative to the whole table. So definitely taking that time individually is probably the way to go. And ultimately, if issues become really severe, particularly if they become physical, then unfortunately, you got to kick people out of the group. It's really easy for me to tell you all these things about, you know, having these communications with your players, but the reality is it's difficult. It's hard to have these conversations. And this is why I say communication is the ultimate key to this hobby that we play in. We need to learn how to master our ability to share our thoughts and feelings with our fellow players because it is an intimate experience. I know that sounds weird to say that, but really having that openness to be able to like express, you know, these strange fantasies with each other. And that sounds kind of sexual, but it shouldn't. We're basically playing pretend with some rules at the table. But ultimately, we're people. We all have lives. We all have things going on. And all we have is our voice to be able to share with each other these things. I hope that makes sense. I hope that doesn't sound too hokey pokey. You know what I mean? Anyway, that's all I got for this week, folks. I hope you found that helpful. I hope you enjoyed the phone calls. I really, really appreciate everybody who called in. And I just wanted to say thank you so much to those of you who have been subscribing and liking and commenting on the YouTube videos. It's working. We're getting up there. I've seen the subscriptions have gone up, and I really encourage you all to continue to share the message, get it out there. I would love to have the Dungeon Plunger podcast reach new ears. Tell your friends, tell your parents, tell your mom, tell your brothers and sisters, tell your pets, so that we can get everybody listening to the Dungeon Plunger podcast, or watching it or listening to it on YouTube. Also, I really, really would love to have somebody give me a review on the Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. I would love to be able to read your review out there. This is how we're going to spread the good word. You know what I'm saying? We got to spread the good word. We got to fight the algorithm. All right? And I'm telling you, world peace. We can have world peace if we can make the Dungeon Plunger podcast get out there. All right? That's a promise. Not one that I can keep, but I'm going to promise it anyway. So, I would like to thank, again, Joe Richter, Jason Connerly, and Barry, as well as the Clog and Goblin and Hector. And I would like to tell you that the music for this show is by Alexander Kizunaku. The cover art is by John McNally from the Pacific Northwest. He actually just sent me a little mini portfolio of all his work, and it is fantastic. So if you're ever looking to get some real cool artwork done for whatever the project it is that you do, reach out. I can hook you up. And you know what? I won't even charge you a finder's fee, because that's what kind of guy I am. Remember, you can call in and leave a message at www.speakpipe.com/the Dungeon Plunger, or send in an email, no nudes, at dungeonplunger, all one word, @gmail.com. I have put in all the people that called in the show notes, so that you can go and listen to their podcasts and support them as well. Thank you and good night. Elbows up, everybody. Play that funky music.
Greetings, listener. It is I, Hector, the real Dungeon Plunger. Not that poser, Jason. We've got a clogged algorithm down here. So make sure we get those likes, those favorites, those comments flowing. Plungers up!
Ha! You probably thought I forgot. But remember, when you're plunging into the dungeon and nature calls, watch out for mimics disguised as toilets, because they're a pain in the butt.
Elbows up!